the Around the NFL podcast. Might return punts this season.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What is happening?
Ow!
Good morning. First week of the preseason's over. We're here in the morning, starting it off. I don't know.
A lot to get to. It went from in the middle of the off season where we're scratching our heads like chimpanzees trying to figure out what are we going to talk about today, to a veritable feast of football stuff to go over, and we're going to try to get into as much as we can on another episode of the Around the NFL podcast. This weekend, by the way, we were at West Fest. Oh. Not a West Fest, but it was a big party at Wes's.
It wasn't a sanctioned WrestleMania event, but it was fun.
It wasn't even your idea. Someone else suggested that they have their birthday party at your house, even though you barely know them.
That's
a
true statement.
That was an interesting move. The people seemed very nice that I met.
They were very nice.
And on the NFL Network.
Good time was had. I was a little more stressed out than I normally would be because I had to host.
Yeah, put it on your host hat. And maybe that plays into what happened then on the cornhole boards where
– Oh, no.
Where Chris Wessling, that's the three of us, very flattering photos of all of us.
Oh, horrible.
Where Chris Wessling, right there, you'll see him on the right, me on the left, defeated by the old Zeus twice in three games. Let's talk about it, Wes.
Oh, my God.
What do you want to talk about?
I didn't know that.
Well, it was.
I'm surprised you showed up for work.
It was, you know, I wasn't gloating about it. Well, I did a little bit, but listen,
not
Wes
at all.
And I went head to head, and I put a lot on the board. And then my teammate Ali did a great job also. And the end of the game was 2-1, the old Zeuser over Wes.
Wait, I wasn't there. Let me try to make a prediction after not having been there. Did Wes throw whoever his teammate was under the bus after the game?
No.
Who was his teammate?
Emily, the girl whose birthday party
was. Birthday.
You can't throw her under the bus in that circumstance.
But Wes did, as things started to turn in the wrong direction, he started to mention more about the lack of sunlight, about how he'd been drinking throughout the day. But bottom line is, Wes, come on, I was throwing pretty good corn.
Look, if I showed up at a party at like 7 o'clock after everyone else had been having fun and doing things for 6 or 7 hours, I would probably be in good shape in cornhole as well.
I am 11-0 as Wes's teammate, and yeah. I've never recorded a statistic. He's a one-man show. The other person just has to get out of the way.
So, yes, Wes's inability to give me credit here speaks to the
Dan threw game. Well. Dan threw very well.
Maybe it was the fuchsia-colored NFL.com t-shirt that threw.
Look, my whole game was off. I was supposed to change clothes halfway through, but I was all bent out of shape because I'm grilling burgers and dogs and all this stuff.
Well, that image got tweeted out, and people were not impressed with the trio's appearance in general.
No, I guess we could have been a little more put together for the party, but it's a summer, very hot day in Los Angeles. It was a fun time. Good meat products, Wes.
Thank you.
All right. So, yes, big show today. Big show. We have a lot to get to, and we're going to hit all of it. And, we have a lot of news, of course. We have the preseason. Week one is in the books. A lot of games to go over and storylines. So, unfortunately, one of the worst aspects of the preseason, there's always injuries. So we'll hit on some injuries. And then, like we've been teasing for weeks and weeks, it is time. With Greg Rosenthal, Roto-World founder, really the brain behind Roto-World.
Not true.
And then Chris Wessling, his first lieutenant
of Roto-World.
You know, the two men, we thought we need to get them on the show, on the Around the NFL podcast to talk fantasy.
What about Mark?
Mark's here.
I mean, I could leave at any moment, though, from
Mark's
the sound
here. So that we will. This is the Around the NFL Fantasy Spectacular Week.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, the Gin Blossoms.
That's all we could afford?
That's it.
At least it's not Train. This is the first NFL event.
By the way,
Train is not playing.
Great point, Greg. Hey, NFL, league office, Park Avenue, stop hiring Train.
Not enough Train.
Well, you can thank Janet Jackson for that.
Well, that's true.
By the way, I'm looking down. We have a rundown now that we're taping the full show. And I believe we've come to the part of the show called Mirth Chat 2. So please have a Mirth Chat 2 for the next few seasons.
Mark, say something funny and irreverent.
No, you're the host. You need to deliver something that, you know, springboards Mirth Chat 2 segments.
But it should be known, Fantasy Spectacular, we're going to do three segments on each of our shows this week, getting into different things. Today's show, we're going to dig into the running backs and tight ends, preview those positions, and hopefully we'll make you smarter ahead of your big draft. So that's everything that's going on today. Now we check behind the glass. TD made a really weird, very LA-like cameo at Wes's party, literally for 25 to 30 minutes, pulled up in a high-priced sports car, and then left.
And took pictures.
And took pictures and then left. TD, how are you doing, buddy?
How's it going, guys? It was my first time in West Manor.
Oh, look at this. We've got the camera in the back now.
Yes,
for
that's right.
Watching.
We got the behind-the-glass camera. Wes, great party.
Thank you.
Man, you could have used a little light carbs items, but other than that, it was
fantastic. Oh, yeah, he was looking for water.
And nice try.
Not at Wes's party.
Yeah. There was an ocean like 20 feet away.
Yeah, friend.
I don't throw water parties.
Really nice spot.
TD, I mean, it was clear to me that you showed up, you know, you took a look at what was going on. You said, I can't just leave right away because it's obviously impossible to get there. Gave it about 20 minutes and got out of there as fast as you could.
Well, I did have a movie to go catch, so that was...
What did you say?
Straight out of Compton.
I shouldn't ask. Oh, Straight out of Compton? Mm-hmm. How was it? Made like $55 million.
Yeah, really good money you made. Ice Cube's son was great because he had his mannerisms of his dad. But Corey Hawkins, who played Dr. Dre, sounded a lot like Dr. Dre, so that was fantastic. Big Dre fan.
See, look, we even got a movie review in for you.
Very good. All right, let's do some news.
You just do what I'm coached and have fun. Come out here and let it go and enjoy the moment.
Hey, look, you found a way to squeeze Tebow into the podcast.
Sure, I did, baby.
That might be it for Tebow.
You know, I should mention before the show started that Wes said he did two radio interviews over the weekend, and the first questions he got were about Tebow, and he instantly marked those hosts as idiots.
It's not the exact phrasing I used, but to act like Tim Tebow is the biggest story in the NFL this weekend shows that you really don't know much about football.
Ooh.
I was here in the social media limb of our
taking
operation.
Taking shots at NFL Network.
It was like an intimate experience for them.
If the shoe fits.
Forget it.
Well, you got to enjoy it. This is Tebow season. It's going to end in a couple weeks.
No more Tebow after this. And, God, again, league office, no more train. I know San Francisco, you want to tie it in. They're from the Bay Area. There's got to be an up-and-coming.
You are the only person that knows that they're from the Bay Area.
I don't need no Pat Monahan in my life. The old Zeuser. My quote of the day.
Wow.
All right, here we go. We'll start with injury news. Like we said, this was actually not from the preseason. This is an issue that the Chicago Bears have been dealing with throughout the offseason. Kevin White, the 7th overall pick in May's draft, or I guess it was the last day of April, he developed a shin issue, which it was a little shady or shaky what it was. They were saying shin splints. Turned out it was a stress fracture. White had a setback this past week, which led to the team's decision for White now to undergo surgery on the shin, which will cost him at least 6 weeks. He's going to start the season on the PUP list. But more tellingly and disturbingly, if you're a Bears fan, general manager Ryan Pace left the door open that White can miss his entire rookie season, Greg.
It's huge. I mean, Wes, you are more excited about Kevin White, I think, than any rookie player. And the Bears have such a bad roster on defense and so many other questions that the one thing they had was a pretty fun skill position group. You had Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey on the outside. You got Martellus Bennett and Matt Forte. You thought maybe with Adam Gase they can cook something up, and now it looks like his entire rookie season is going to be a wash.
Yeah, he was my favorite coming out of the draft just because how charismatic he was at the draft. Just a unique guy. I really liked him. You know, I thought yesterday this is about how bleak it looked for Odell Beckham last summer. And then I heard that he needed surgery to put a rod in his leg.
Yeah.
So I think we can stop any kind of late season impact comparisons to Odell Beckham. That sounds like it will be entire season.
We were just talking the other day that the Bears, like, what team are you least excited to sit down and watch? And I don't know why for me it's the Bears, because I think it starts with Jay Cutler and it's John Fox. And it's the whole operation. And White was one of the things you could look at and say, no, there's something to watch, and he's gone.
By the way, it just shows that you can never – not that we should have to relearn this, but you can never trust coaches or players on injuries on anything. As recently as Friday, they were saying how he was going to be back on the field very soon. And then the next day, he's basically out for the season.
My Saturday morning shift on the news desk today was – or on Saturday was write a post at 6:45 or 7 in the morning about Kevin White saying Friday how he wishes he's ready for the field. And I thought in the NFL they make you get on the field when you're hurting, but I guess I was wrong. But I'm ready to practice. 3 hours later, Ryan Pace has a press conference and says that Kevin White could be out for the year. So what did it make sense of it?
This was, the burden was on you. That's the center.
I got banged, yeah. Is what I'm saying.
I hear you. I feel for you.
Bears are a mess. I mean,
yes, they are.
They're hoping Cutler gets better. I like watching Jay Cutler still. But then you look at their defense, and they have all these guys that are built for a totally different type of defense. And it's this transition year where they have a ton of guys standing up when they're really hand-in-the-ground pass rushers. And it seems like they could be one of the worst teams.
Well, they got smoked in the preseason game, and they look slow on defense.
Yes, they did.
I don't really care about preseason results at all. But I will say that, like, maybe with an absence of expectations and a professional good coach in there, Cutler, everyone counting him out, maybe they could surprise people.
It's very generous of you.
Decent, 8-9 wins.
Good division. Yeah.
All right. Elsewhere, the San Diego Chargers and Philip Rivers. You know, we had talked that maybe a divorce was coming earlier in the offseason. It's not going to happen. The team announced that Rivers has agreed to a 4-year extension. This happened on Saturday night. That will keep him under contract through 2019. Rap sheet. Don't know about that hair. Reports that Rivers' extension includes over $83 million in new money with $65 million in guarantees. Mark Sessler, this wraps up, like I said, an offseason where we didn't know what his future was. Maybe he didn't want to be in L.A. if the Chargers ended up there. I guess that's all out the window now. No trade clause also in the contract.
Well, I mean, and part of it was earlier in the offseason, oh, maybe he'd like to finish his career in Tennessee, but Tennessee's found a quarterback, and so have most other teams that he would have considered. So this was your best option. I'm not that surprised the Chargers got this done. They really wanted to keep him.
Well, like you said, all the other quarterback openings are closed now, and he knew that the Chargers could just slap him with the franchise tag the next 2 years. So he really had no options unless he wanted to retire. I mean, that's the way, fact of life in the NFL.
And that's how this is how it should be.
I agree.
He's 33 years old. He's had what will be an interesting Hall of Fame debate kind of career, depending on how the next few years go. This is a team that hasn't done a ton of winning since early on in the Rivers era. I mean, really winning playoff games. And he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks, I think, of the last 10 years. So I'd like to see him in San Diego and get it done. Maybe in L.A. next year. We can go watch him in person.
Ooh, that would be
People nice. Forget that last year he broke a record for most consecutive games of a 120 or more passer rating. And then he had back injury down the stretch, and his offensive line kind of crumbled. But he was playing at a really high level for most of the season.
It's another reminder, don't listen to the negotiation points during the offseason, although this one was different. I have a theory on this whole Philip Rivers thing.
Greg, I would like to hear your theory. I think we all would, both in this room and the podcast audience.
I mean, Philip Rivers, he wanted to go to Tennessee, period. I think Ken Wisenhunt and him, they share an agent. He wanted to get there. He put it out there. Kevin Acey, who's very close to him, basically put it out there too, that he'd like to be in the South to finish up his career. He said in March, on the record, when asked, would you sign a contract this year? Is there any scenario you would sign a contract before the season starts? He said, honestly, nothing would change my mind. He mentioned the possible move to Los Angeles, alluded to that, said, I'm not going to sign that contract no matter what. The Chargers, give them credit, stood firm. They had no interest in trading Rivers. The thing I'm confused about is whether how much the Titans really wanted him, or was it just Rivers trying to get out? The Chargers said, no way. We're going to call your bluff. We're going to keep you here. We're going to use the franchise tag if we have to. And then once, you know, they drafted Mariota,
well, the
took money.
The Titans aren't of one mindset. Ken Wisenhunt wanted him. That doesn't mean that everybody in the front office
That's
wanted him.
Point.
That's probably what happened.
And there was definitely a conversation that went on for a long time between the coach and the GM about what to even do with that draft pick. So Mariota, though, that cleared everything up. And, like, it would have been crazy to see Rivers in Tennessee, but he belongs in San Diego. I agree with Greg.
Greg, way to read between the lines and see what the average football fan cannot.
That's my role here.
All right, moving on. The New York Jets, they have moved forward with Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, after Geno Smith got knocked out by his former teammate, I.K. Inampale. Nailed it. Now, the latest drama this weekend was the New York Post. Listen, Alec Baldwin, one of my spirit animals, hates the New York Post because they're basically like TMZ East Coast. They send a cameraman and a reporter to Geno Smith's apartment complex or wherever he lives, and they snapped him having a catch with his buddy, shirtless, with some black bandages on his face that made him look like Robert Durst, essentially. Made him look like a very strange man. But that then turned into a story because then it gets back to the Jets, who call up Geno Smith and says, hey, doctor's orders, do not throw when you're injured while you're healing up. And everyone gets on Geno Smith, and it's a big story in New York. I'm just saying, Greg, completely manufactured. Greg, sometimes you say, everybody talks about it, so the New York market's so hard. What's so hard about it? This is why the New York market stinks, because when you're in trouble, they will finish you off, and Geno Smith's being finished off by the media.
You don't think the Nashville Tennesseans following people around?
I don't think Jim Wyatt's writing a heat seeker about Mariota's complex that he lives in.
Who would have thought that of all that's happened to Geno Smith in the last week, the most embarrassing thing yet is that he's wearing eye black shirtless.
By the way,
while tossing with his buddy. Why is he wearing like
that? It wasn't eye black. It was bandages from his jaw surgery that people took that and ran with it. A team spokesman confirmed it.
Why is it up around his eyes?
I don't see any retraction coming from the New York Post, though, about that either.
Wait, why is it
turning into the modern day Michael Jackson here?
Why is it under his eye? I picked Geno Smith to make the leap. And I still think he could come back and be good.
Is he still in the league?
That eye black was the first time I started to worry. I was like, okay, maybe it's not going to happen.
I think it's just a terrible sign. The aftermath where Geno Smith, he's a bit of an odd bird to begin with. You just get the sense.
It seems like he is, yes.
But other than Brandon Marshall this morning, Monday morning, coming forward and saying, supporting Geno Smith to some degree, the eerie silence from that locker room tells you everything about where he is with that team.
Could also be telling you that Brandon Marshall is working his little anti-magic in the locker room already.
We're behind us right now. They're showing the Geno Instagram picture from after getting knocked out again. I can't even look at that photo. That is not my guy. I can't get behind him. But I will say that, yeah, Geno, for all the mistakes he's made, this was not one of them. He was having a catch. And I tweeted about this.
What do you mean? Todd Bowles said it was a mistake. That's the telling response.
Oh,
Todd
come Bowles, on. Because he got put on the spot in the media. He's like, he's not supposed to be doing that.
No.
We talked to him. But it comes out in the press like, oh, he wasn't supposed to do that. Geno Smith is a complete fool.
Well, but it's rooted in mistakes that he's made. He wouldn't be in his driveway throwing a Nerf ball with a neighbor.
Send cameras out and follow around everybody else in the NFL and see what you get. It's a lot worse than having a catch in the front yard.
I agree, but if Todd Bowles was trying to protect him and believed in Geno Smith and wasn't already annoyed at him, he would protect him publicly. He wouldn't call him out like that.
Nobody's
just like he kind of called him out.
They inherited him, and they don't like him.
Fault.
I'm becoming more and more confident that we'll never see him play another snap for the Jets.
I think he'll play. By the way, we're just a few minutes into the show, and Dan has already called himself the old Zeuser in the third person and come up with the old Zeuser quote of the day as a segment. And he said his spirit animal is Alec Baldwin. So you pretty much can see how Dan sees himself right now. He's not the only one with a fan base. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the difference is that I'm very aware that my fan base is mostly just me being a fan of myself.
What? Alec, wait, was that a shot at me?
No. But
not in the least.
Come on, Wes. Wes is sensitive. They put a little extra makeup on him today, so he's a little worked up.
I came into the newsroom. Mark looked at me like this.
Well, because
then Dan gave me the same look. I feel like I'm a monster.
We're bathed under fluorescent lights, and Wes in makeup under fluorescent lights in a newsroom it caught me off guard. You don't see him made up normally. Not at his barbecue.
They put eyebrows on me.
You didn't have to make like a sound and hide under your desk.
You came back.
Well, that was a little much.
You came back with eyebrows. That was, I guess, a little telling. But you have eyebrows, but they're more defined now.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
By the way, for the podcast listeners, and we'll let you know, by the way, because we're getting tweets, where can we watch this? It's still being worked out when we're like all on board and we're on video with NFL Now and Apple TV. Stay tuned on that. If you're hearing like laser beam sounds, which, yes, it sounds ridiculous to me too, that is cutting to video and cutting back for our eventual video show. So do not be alarmed. This isn't – what's the Orson Welles
Well, there's someone in War of the Worlds.
Do not go panic and evacuate your area.
In the meantime, you can still check out the videos, nfl.com/podcast.
Ooh.
Thank you very much. Nice. We do have some things up, but the entire show, TD, you'll be the first one to let us know, right?
We'll do, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, now let's move on and talk about some preseason action. Jameis Winston, we'll start with the number one and number two picks because, you know, that's saucy and juicy. Right, Mark?
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, Jameis Winston had an uneven preseason debut. This, according to a hot take from Greg Rosenthal on our site. 9 of 19 passes, 131 yards, interception, and a fumble in his first game action. He had his last possession. It was a touchdown drive. But against, you know, backup at that point. So I guess, Greg, like a lot of us are expecting, there's going to be some wow plays mixed in with some head scratchers. That's Jameis Winston right now.
Yeah, and I'm not going to take the results of the preseason too seriously. Cam Newton famously was terrible as a rookie in his preseason, played great. The opposite was true for Blake Bortles last year. Winston did come out. I mean, it really looked like he was just too amped up. His first three throws were just awful, awful throws. And he had a lot of bad moments, two center snap exchanges that were bad, an interception. With that said, he also had some really good moments, a 40-yard pass where he got hit, a third and 17, three third and longs, a rushing touchdown. So he showed a little bit of everything, good and bad, and at least the Bucs fans saw some good.
I think Lovie Smith said after the game that it was a very Jameis Winston-type performance. It's sort of what they've seen in camp and in practices. And I think we've said from the start, he's not statistically going to be a flawless rookie quarterback at all. It's not showing some of what we've heard about Mariota. This is a different type of guy who's going to have his turnovers, but he's make his big plays too.
I tell you what I took away was they lost their right tackle for who knows how long. Damar Dodson, who's their best offensive lineman. Mm. Their rookie left tackle got Everson Griffin, put a clown suit on him. I think what I want to see from Jameis Winston throughout the preseason is just stay in one piece. This is still the worst offensive line in the NFL, I think.
You wrecked two quarterbacks last year, and now you got a rookie.
Doug Martin agrees. Doug Martin, who did look good when he got the ball.
Looked quick, but also missed a hole, which has been a problem for him for a couple of years.
There were people in the backfield a ton because of that offensive line.
Next up, Marcus Mariota, the number two pick in the draft, also had an up-and-down preseason opener. He started with – it started about as bad as possible, actually. His first two possessions, interception – then lost the fumble that was returned for a touchdown. His third possession, however, he led the Titans on a touchdown drive, ending with a touchdown run. So similar situation, maybe some jitters involved. They were down 17-0, got him on the board and got out of the game. So Marcus Mariota also up and down, 7 of 8, 94 yards, interception, lost fumble, and he took a sack. Didn't run at all either, so we should see that, but not yet.
I mean, what I loved about him was they showed him on the sideline after, you know, two awful possessions, and he was cool. I mean, he was talking to his teammates. He wasn't, you know, off in a corner with a towel over his head. And he came back, I thought he showed a lot of moxie on that scoring drive. And that's what Wisenhunt basically said after. That's who this guy is.
Our video guys just showed this really nice touch pass he had to Antonio Andrews coming out of the backfield down the sideline. That was one of my favorite throws of the weekend. Very nice touch.
The offensive line there is also an issue, and he was under heat. They made the Atlanta Falcons look like the fearsome foursome or something. I mean, they were all over him early. And one little note there is that they changed up the offensive line in practice a couple days after this game, and Andy Levitre, who was one of the highest-paid free agents in the entire league 2 years ago, was not necessarily starting. It sounds like he might get cut. How about that?
That would be stunning.
You know who else is not going to be starting? Bishop Sankey.
Mm.
I like David Cobb 10 times better. He's going to help Mariota out.
Yeah, he had a good game.
A little bit of a teaser for perhaps some discussion later.
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe. Not the only quarterback heat this weekend. Let's talk about the Houston Texans, who, of course, have what Bill O'Brien described in the first episode of Hard Knocks is really a battle that's neck and neck right now between Brian Hoyer, formerly Cleveland Springsteen, and Ryan Mallett. And both quarterbacks played well. Hoyer came in, led him on a touchdown drive, and then Mallett comes out, and he does some nice things too. So it's one of those happy problems for the Texans where perhaps no one really stood out above the other guy because they both played well. However, Mark, Ryan Mallett will start week two of the preseason. What do you take of that?
Well, I'd like to see what they just did. Can that be pulled off two games in a row? Because if there's anything about Mallett, it feels like even last season in his two starts, he was injured in the second one, granted, but really nice performance in Cleveland for the most part, a completely different quarterback the next week. These are two guys, same with Brian Hoyer. It's a flip of a coin. You don't know what you're going to get.
Well, Mallett, like you said, his first start against Cleveland, he got coached really close to the vest. They didn't take many chances down the field. Everything was built off the run. And there was a lot of that in the preseason game this past weekend, too, where I only remember Mallett throwing it past 10 yards one time.
Right.
You'd like to see him use that arm.
He had one incompletion. He had 90 yards on 11 attempts. He made all the good decisions. There wasn't a lot that I took out of either player. I mean, Hoyer played one drive. He had a third and long completion that was a diving catch. If that guy doesn't make the diving catch, Hoyer's three and out. Who knows? And then he made a nice throw to Cecil Shorts, who took it, you know, 58 yards. It was really just a throw. Either way, they looked okay. I think Hoyer's still the guy here. It's a weird setup.
I feel like they're both going to start eight games.
Why start Mallett next week? And then he said it'll be the same setup where Mallett starts, but he basically only stays in until he scores or has a brief outing, and then Hoyer
makes as much sense as any other use of quarterback
but
in the preseason.
If you think about it, yeah, like maybe, all right, so they want to give Mallett a start, give him that, but then when the third preseason game, which is really where everybody plays the most, Hoyer's back behind center.
Yeah,
and unless Hoyer bombs out, I would think then he gets named starter. It seems like Hoyer's still the favorite despite what Bill O'Brien says.
I agree. To me, the Bills situation is more competitive. I think the Bills situation is truly up in the air. Tyrod Taylor played in their preseason opener very well, stood out, now down to Castle and Tyrod Taylor, and that's it. It's a two-person race.
Like, Castle's statistics, if you just look at the box score, were great. But if you watch the game, Taylor brought more energy to that offense. I think that someone, when you look at what they have and who their offensive coordinator is, he likes someone like Taylor and what he can do.
Yeah, and I think Rex has always liked Tyrod Taylor. Like, you know, I'm very biased in this because we have to watch these games. I want to watch the fun guy, and that's
sure.
Tyrod Taylor.
He did. He did some things with his legs that made you think that you can imagine Rex Ryan watching this, and Rex is obviously no quarterback expert. We know that. But knowing that if someone could bring some type of X factor to the game, it's Tyrod Taylor. We know what Matt Castle is. And EJ Manuel, he looks like he's just a complete afterthought here.
I think Ryan looks at it from what can I make the defensive coaching staff on the team we're going to play. They're going to have to go spend time worrying about Taylor's extra aspect of his game, where Castle
right.
brings none of that.
That's
he always thinks like that,
yeah.
which isn't necessarily
what gets him in trouble.
A smart
sure.
way to think. I mean, it hasn't worked out.
Well, that's why they're running the Wildcat in 2014 in New York.
It's also why they traded for Tebow.
Right.
Did we talk about Tebow yet?
Well, offhandedly.
Played football.
The biggest story of the weekend?
Four-string
quarterback for the Eagles?
The best part of Tebow was watching Mike Mayock, who called the game. Like, he completed a pass, and Mayock's like, oh, that was good. Nice power throw there or something. Like that. It was, like, very, like, straight-ahead analysis. There's not much you could say about Tim Tebow.
Well, Mayock also said if they're making a decision about who can read the defense and make a decision and quickly get the ball out of his hands, it's not a competition. That Matt Barkley is leagues ahead of
who looked
Tim
good
Tebow,
yesterday, actually.
Which surprised me to hear that Matt Barkley is leagues ahead of anyone. But I guess in terms of that normal sort of quarterback skill set, he is.
I think with Tebow, I mean, you know, watching him, yes, his motion is, I guess, a little tighter. It's a little bit different. But he is still one of the ugliest throwers around.
Yes.
And you can't imagine him being put into a real game and having to get deal with a 3rd-and-16 type situation.
Here's the exact Mayock quote, to be fair to Mike. Nice throw. Hung in the pocket. Made a throw. That's about as glowing.
You know, the bullets are flying. You got to say what you think.
All right, let's go around the horn now, guys. And preseason week one in the books, standout performances, guys that jumped out to you from week one. And Mark, I'll start with you.
I'll go with Shane Ray. I thought watching that Broncos game, that their pass rush, you know, I think everything all offseason was how will Peyton Manning look in the offense, and that's obviously huge. But you forget that Denver has built a really nice roster in other parts of the team, and the way that they got after Russell Wilson in the start of that game, forget the end of the game, the way they got after him early on, very promising.
Mm.
Two impressive rookie pass rushers in that game. Frank Clark of the Seahawks, too, was very impressive, but Shane Ray did look good.
How about you, Wes?
Two backup quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins, who I think is better than a few starters, including the one on his own team, and Chase Daniel of the Chiefs, who Greg wrote as a making the leap candidate, stood in the pocket and took some hits and still was dead accurate on a lot of throws. I think he had three possessions and led three touchdown drives. This guy could start for some teams. He's really accurate.
Hey, by the way, he knocked the Chargers out of the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say August is Chase Daniel time.
Unlike,
I mean, this is Chase Daniel season.
Yeah, he looked good in that game,
former
too.
Former making the leap candidate.
He's still going to make it. Maybe he did make it last
Everybody's
year.
Talking about Mettenberger, Kirk Cousins, and Chase Daniel. Better prospects,
you know,
in my
opinion. You want someone that knows how to start? You know, the season off, right? You think of Chase Daniel, and he knows how to finish. You bring him in for that Week 17 game and knock out the
They card. Don't win that Week 17 game without him. He was a big reason that
they have a lot more than zero touchdown passes to wide receivers last year if Chase Daniel played all 16
and
games.
And that's the last time we'll talk about Chase Daniel this
yes.
year.
By the way, Wes, over-under Kirk Cousins starts 8.5.
I'll take the over.
What?
He's better than the starter.
If
I'm sorry.
He is looking good, and he's got the coaches, coaching staff.
Here's a little stat.
RG3's not going to
have a know I'll get some brushback from Redskins fans. Here's a little stat for you. Kirk Cousins averaged 100 more yards per game than Robert Griffin last year and had more touchdowns in six games than Griffin and Colt McCoy had in 14 combined.
Mm. Cousins has looked
He moves the sticks.
Too,
he Look, he's two problems with him. He needs to show resiliency when he has a turnover. He's yet to do that. And he throws into coverage too much. But I'll take that versus not being able to move an offense.
He reminds me a lot of Geno Smith.
Yes, he lacks resiliency.
Which I think is maybe better than Robert Griffin III at this point. We'll see.
I think he's a better passer than Geno Smith.
Fourth or games, though, I thought Cousin kind of lost his head at times last season.
That's what he needs. He needs that resilience.
True. I think that that's better than sheer ineptitude, which is what RG3 was all last year.
That's fair. I will go with, and this is a little shout-out to our overseas listeners, Jarryd Hayne, the San Francisco 49ers running back, of course, the former Australian rugby star. What is it?
Rugby league
rugby
star.
Rugby league?
Rugby league.
They're urging us to say rugby league star.
It's
not the same thing.
There's a difference between the rugby league and rugby union, completely different sports, but don't get the Australians – and the English going back and forth about it because
we don't want
agree
that
on things.
Because yes, they have before and they will again. But Hayne, in his first NFL training camp, his first preseason game, 120 yards against the Texans, and that included a 53-yard run down the left sideline for Jim Tomsula's team against the Texans in a 23-10 loss. Now, Jim Tomsula was the first one to point out. Everybody, calm down. You know, relax. This was not against starters. He's got a long way to go, but promising, and this is Reggie Bush's boy, of course. I think Reggie Bush all but guaranteed Hayne was going to make the roster, and this is a nice start.
Well, I think
the foreigner,
at risk of aggravating our fans down under, Jim Tomsula is right. This guy lacks instincts for football right now. He's a special teamer, and you see when he gets in space, he's fine. But that 53-yard run was a gaping hole that anybody could have run through. That I just when I noticed him on all of these other plays, he doesn't know.
And he shook off a tackle.
He doesn't know exactly what he's doing in tight spaces yet.
Yeah.
And I think he's not a running back. He's a special team.
Well, they did say that he has been one of the fastest learners on that team, that he's picking it up quick. So I hope that he has a chance to continue to develop because he's fun to watch.
I don't think he's guaranteed to make the team.
He's not guaranteed, but he almost started that game, and he started it as a returner and a running back. So they're giving him a chance. My takeaway was just all the good rookie receivers over the weekend, especially the little guys. Nelson Aguilar, who's not as small, 185 pounds, but then
thin.
Tyler Lockett and Philip Dorsett. Those guys average about 175 pounds between them. They all look lightning fast. They kind of fit what the NFL is all about right now, and they look like they're going to be factors right away.
And on Aguilar's touchdown, I mean, Mark Sanchez threw a bad ball. He had to jump up and grab it and then made a move, you know, in space afterwards. Yes, it's true, Dan.
Lockett is a rare NFL player that makes the rest of the players on the field look really slow. Not many people do that. I mean, he's going to be a return guy, but, I mean, he could be something.
And they didn't have a kick return past the 47 last year, I think it was, so that's going to change.
Wow.
All right, gentlemen. That is it for the news and the week one of the preseason review. We got three more of these preseason weeks before the big curtain goes up. But now the curtain goes up for us as well. I've been teasing it for weeks. And, you know, I see on the screen behind me, I don't know how many times I got to tell my producer, this is not the fantasy football preview. This is the fantasy football spectacular TD. Around the NFL's Fantasy Spectacular 2015. Oh, my God, listen to that. Listen to the Gin Blossoms, our house band. I should say that is not the Gin Blossoms, but it sounds kind of like a bluesier version of them. Three shows this week. All three shows will have dedicated segments. And, guys, I was thinking about this. You got to cut through the noise in fantasy. There's so many people. We could lose the Gin Blossoms now.
Oh, no. I think we should just keep them around. They they need the work.
Yeah. We'll pay
them
chunky
soup.
Hanging
out all week.
You know, you got to cut through the noise in the fantasy world. There's so, as you got, Greg and Wes and Mark, you're here as well. Like, you guys know there's so many competitors out there. Everybody's saying, we're the experts. We're the experts. No. So I was thinking of some catchphrases for us.
Okay.
By the way, there's
taglines.
There's no such thing as a fantasy football expert.
Shh, 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 shh. Don't tell anyone. Here's some taglines. You guys, yay or nay?
Okay.
Congrats, everybody. You're in the catbird seat now. How about that?
What's this for?
This is our tagline.
I'm going to pass on that one.
Okay, that's fine.
Catbird of what? All right.
You're in the catbird seat now.
No.
Okay, that's fine. We guarantee you win your fantasy league. I don't know if that's legally.
I don't think I want to take responsibility with
what
some guy's doing in
everyone,
week five of his season.
I think that's safe. Everyone listening to this will win all their leagues.
How about this? Duh, you'll be winning.
That's
bring it back, maybe?
It's not coming back.
That's promising.
All right, how about this? All the other guys in your leagues are
yeah. I like
that. Well, listen, you talk about cutting
that
through the white noise.
Power.
That's true, too. I know those guys.
Really, that might
Dan?
Be the one.
Really?
What?
Really?
What? Oh, what did I do?
Let's get to the fantasy football preview, sir.
Okay, sorry, TD. You know, this is the spectacular TD. I don't know how many times I need to repeat myself. This is the spectacular.
Thank you, Jin.
And there's no that's train
his, that's his name.
Involved.
Jin.
All right, let's get into it. We're going to do – how do we want to do this, TD? Are we going to do – you want to go through tight ends first or running
No, running backs, sir.
Let's do some
running
backs.
For. There we go.
Undervalued running backs. Now, this is the whole
– overvalued running backs.
Overvalued running backs. We want to make sure you don't get sucked into the hype train. We're here to tell you who is overvalued at the running back position. Greg, get us going.
Well, let's start at the very top. And Wes sent me a list, and I wish I could disagree with it more than I did, but I agreed with a lot of it. And he wanted to talk about Justin Forsett as a guy who's getting drafted way too high, and I agree.
He's going in the second round.
Here's a guy who had a career year last year. He's about, you know, he's a lot stronger than us, but he's about our size, hasn't had a great career, a journeyman, and they're changing offenses. That's who you want to avoid, people with different situations going on.
I don't think that's a small point about changing offenses. Basically, Gary Kubiak picks up Justin Forsett wherever he goes. Forsett said at one point last year that he owed his season to Gary Kubiak, who stood on the table for him. Now, Kubiak leaves, takes his zone blocking scheme with him. They're going to keep it under Trestman, but Trestman's never run a zone blocking scheme before. We have no idea how this is going to work.
Trestman's a QB whisperer. Nobody ever said RB whisperer.
I think that Trestman is typically, he's happy to focus on one running back. It's not going to necessarily be like a committee approach, but Taliaferro played a bunch in their preseason game with the ones.
He looked good. Another guy we've mentioned earlier in this offseason, but because he's going as a first-round pick, I think we should mention it, is C.J. Anderson. Of Denver Broncos. And I think the other night should remind people, C.J. Anderson leaves with an ankle injury. It's not going to be major, but it's a reminder, hey, this guy hasn't done it for an entire season. And the other guys come in, Monty Ball, Ronnie Hillman, and they look great.
Kubiak was effusive in his praise of Hillman, Hillman looked great, like you said. And I think that's the point, that we've seen this year in and year out with Broncos running backs where everybody wants to draft them in the first round, and by week three, they're on the bench.
But, I mean, this – Kubiak does, you know, initiate what might be a great running team this season. They're going to run the ball a lot. They've talked about that. Is it that you don't trust Anderson as a bell cow because they've got two other capable dudes?
Well, it's all about, we're talking value. He's getting taken as a first-round pick, you know, as high as
very
five,
high.
Six,
right.
Seven, whatever it's going to be. You can take Calvin Johnson there. You can take Julio Jones. You can take guys.
Reach.
You can take Jamal Charles. You could take guys that have done it year
Rich.
After year and have been great. And
you got to hit a home
them.
Run with that pick.
It's not just that I don't trust Anderson as a bell cow. It's that you don't know what the coaching staff will do.
Right.
This guy's not established as a dynamite running back.
Let's talk about the Cowboys situation. First, their current running back, and then their former running back who's somewhere else now. Joseph Randall, will you guys believe, and again, if there is maybe for the second show, TD, just an idea, underneath Greg and Wes's names, fantasy icons.
What's under Mark's name?
I'll get to that. But you're
I don't want to know.
Your take on Joseph Randall, Greg Rosenthal.
Well, I don't see him as overvalued. You know,
would draft him in the fourth round?
I don't love the fourth round, but I like Joseph Randall having a good season. I think the Cowboys are showing confidence in him.
He's already hurt.
Showing bums off the street. You know, everyone keeps getting hurt, and they're not bringing in anyone there.
Because they got McFadden.
With all that said, I don't really love him in the fourth round. As much as I think Joseph Randall's going to be fine, I don't like him in the fourth round. So you're right. He's a little overvalued. You think he's going to be a bust.
Well, their offensive coordinator has come right out and said this is a running back by committee. I don't know why everybody's
over and over.
You don't look any further than that. And running back by committee.
And that's how it will start week one. But wait till some of these guys that have injury issues start dropping like flies. Before you know, you'll have some jabroni getting the most carries, and they're going to lean on that offensive line. A couple injuries to that offensive line. All of a sudden, the Cowboys aren't looking so good.
See, I think they're going to throw the ball. I think it's going to be much closer to somewhere in the middle between where they were 2 years ago and last year. It's not going to look like what it was last season with the percentage of runs.
It would be crazy if it was. First of all, they would have to have as good an offense, and that was one of the best offenses of the last 10 years. Second, you don't have DeMarco Murray. I mean, it is as much as I like Randall for fourth round, where you can get guys like Carlos Hyde is still there. Frank Gore is sometimes still on the board. I mean, very good wide receivers are still on the board. It's a little too rich.
Don't get cute.
What's the most carries he's ever had in a game? Like 12?
Randall?
Yeah, let's calm down.
Is DeMarco Murray overvalued, by the way, after being the offensive player of the year, going to split the load a little bit this year?
I think he is just because of Ryan Matthews.
Let me tell you something about fantasy, too. If you're stuck having to do this and play fantasy, then you might as well draft people that you want to root for. And I would never sign up for – I would never put McFadden on my fantasy team.
What about DeMarco?
It's a time bomb waiting to go off.
Wait, but we're talking about DeMarco Murray here.
Oh, DeMarco Murray, sure. Well, that's a different conversation.
Well, I'm not rooting for him either. In fantasy, you never want to pay for last year, and that's what you're paying for. And the Eagles' offense does change things. I mean, it's a great running offense. But I think Ryan Matthews, as Wes has said, could wind up having a similar amount of yards, and he's going much later. I mean, he's wildly undervalued.
I would draft Ryan Matthews in the 10th round or wherever he's going rather than taking DeMarco Murray in the early second or late first.
The icons have spoken.
Well, what they're talking about in Philly, too, is that they're not just going to throw Matthews in for a play here and there, but they move so fast that Matthews will get his entire drive. And then so
and Matthews is the perfect fit for this offense. I mean, they both are, really, but this Matthews isn't coming off 500 touches.
All right, guys, this is, again, the fantasy spectacular on Around the NFL. Now let's talk about, yeah, all right, rock and roll is fun. Let's talk about undervalued running backs. And, Chris Wessling, this time I'll start with you.
Well, there's one who just jumps out, Jonathan Stewart. Mm. How is this guy? We know he's one of the most talented running backs in the NFL. Down the stretch last year, he has the second most rushing yards over the past 5 weeks of the season, and they have nothing behind him. D'Angelo Williams is out of there. They've got guys like what? Fozzie Whitaker is a threat to Jonathan Stewart? No way.
That's not a real person.
I hear you. I have been Jonathan Stewart's biggest fan forever. Like, I thought he was going to be a top five running back. But the reason he's in the fourth round is because you talked about never doing it before.
He's been around a while now.
Barely ever done it before by himself. He barely ever stays healthy. So I can understand it's a okay-looking offense.
How many years has he gone into the season as the number one undisputed back?
And healthy.
Never.
Well, almost never.
Never. But this year he is.
Well, there was 1 year, though, when we all were expecting him to finally have that breakout year.
But we knew that D'Angelo Williams was there and was getting paid.
And what did Stewart do, though? He got hurt. I mean, he you have to – that's why I don't think the fourth round –
Look, any running back can get hurt, but I'm just saying, look at some of the guys getting drafted ahead. Joseph Randall's getting drafted ahead of him.
Mm. I mean, if he plays the way he did in December and in parts of November as
and
well –
And we have no reason to believe he won't.
Right, then you've got a 1,000-yard rush.
Jonathan Stewart, games played the last 3 years, 9-6-13. So that is – durability cannot be put into question. Now you're going to give him a bigger role and expect him to stay healthy this time. That's a risk. That's fair. That's a risk.
They all have risks.
Yes, but some guys are more injury-prone than
others. The point is, in fantasy football, you want the guy with the highest upside. You want to draft for ceiling because you can pick up floors on the waiver wire halfway through the season.
That's true.
Draft for ceiling.
That'll be part of our Friday show, Fantasy Philosophies.
No.
And that's true. I mean, if you can get a guy.
Don't take him in the first round. You need a sure thing there. But take him in the third round ahead of some of these bums.
Some of the undervalued guys.
Todd Gurley's going ahead of him.
Yeah, that's crazy. Some of the undervalued guys that I want to point out are really guys where you can look at the flip side and the people with them in the backfield are wildly overvalued. And since we didn't have enough time for the overvalued, I'm going to jam it all in right here. Three names. Amir Abdullah, we all like.
Oh, yeah.
I think fourth or fifth round is totally reasonable for him. And it's insane that anyone is taking Joik Bell.
It was crazy to begin with.
It's insane that anyone's taking Joik Bell anywhere near the top 70.
But that's dudes that are just plugging into football now.
But
there are still people who love short yardage backs, too, for some reason.
People still think like he's going to be healthy. This guy wasn't that talented. He's not healthy at all. Devontae Freeman, I totally agree with you, Wes, on that if you're going to take a Falcons running back, for some reason people see him and Tevin Coleman as a similar guys. I'd much rather have Devontae Freeman. And then Trey Mason, Wes is finally coming around to my boy. He's the healthy one in the Rams' backfield. He's going in the 7th or 8th round. You might get a very good starting running back for Trey Mason.
How is Gurley getting drafted like 5 rounds ahead of Trey Mason? That makes no sense to me. We've already had the rap sheet report that Gurley might not even play in September.
David Cobb is a name.
I love Cobb. I mean, because partly because Bishop Sankey, again, is the most boring running back to watch in the entire NFL.
And undervalued isn't all just about guys sort of, you know, sleepers at the end of the draft. Frank Gore and Andre Ellington, take wide receivers.
I loved what
early,
I saw from Ellington.
Take Aaron Rodgers early, take Gronk early, and then go get Gore and Ellington in the second, third round.
I knew Gore would get worked into this somehow. Now,
of course.
Let me say again, here in the Fantasy Spectacular, we have the icons, as I call them, Greg and Wes. But over there in the corner, we talked about, we bring him up a lot on the show, NFL Media Insider Ian Rappaport. I'm looking at right now, NFL Media Fantasy Outsider Mark Sessler.
That's right.
So we're on Sess's corner now. Mark, there's been a lot of consternation that you haven't maybe felt included as we've been building up to the segment, but now you got your own street corner, and you're gonna you know, just spout some truths or opinions.
Well, you know, I want to start right here because what I want to give the fans, we're talking about people that are plugging back in. A couple guaranteed bus.
Wait, this music doesn't
I don't
help
like this.
Us.
Yeah, this is what is
what
the tone
saying.
Of this music is questionable.
That's ridiculous.
The tone's
no clown car.
Yeah, turn it down,
TD.
I got some serious information to get to. All right, listen. These are guys
right,
that you
let's put that behind us.
Yeah, that
NFL
was
un, media.
That was uncalled for. But
Tennessee that's outsider, fine. Mark Sessler.
These are you do not want to pick these guys, and I understand the temptation around some of these names, but you don't do it. Paul Lisicki, Cardinals running back. Stay away from that guy. Capri Bibbs from the Broncos. Not going to be a factor in Denver this autumn.
I'll take him off my list.
Dominique Williams of the Vikings.
Hold on.
Dominique Wilkins?
I wrote notes on Dominique Wilkins over the week, or Dominique Williams over the weekend. He looked pretty good.
Well, he's not going to play this season. You're drafting
no.
him 1 year too early. Terrell Watson, Bengals. Adam Schlitz, the Chiefs. He's getting a lot of buzz. You stay
makes
away from
beer.
Adam Schlitz.
Never draft a guy named Schlitz.
You don't go with Adam Schlitz. David Flewellen of the Titans won't see daylight. Tim Flanders of the Browns. I mean, he's going to be a street free agent. Talking about two free agents that are getting some buzz.
Yeah.
That I also say, I understand, it's a waiver wire type pickup. I'm in a dynasty league. Don't do it. Gregory Bank Oppenheimer, free agent.
These are made up names, right?
His grandfather invented the bomb.
There you go. Gene Whittier Oswald. These are people that I don't draft.
Now so, I know
his
that's
grandfather
made up.
Shot somebody.
I know.
That's
when Oswald
lock.
Comes in, that's a fictional name. It has to be.
This is
we're
like,
learning why you're the fantasy outsider.
If you're going to take 1 minute of the show and put it in your back pocket, I've told you just time bombs to avoid.
You're very much on the outside. And
I am.
You come with the opinions that maybe you don't expect. That's why you're the fantasy outsider. Let's move on the Around the NFL Fantasy Spectacular. Talk some tight ends. And we're going to start with some overvalued tight ends. Wes, we're going to get going with Greg Olsen.
I think this is Greg's boy.
Oh, is that your boy?
It's not my boy. It because he's overvalued. You pick one season out of what's been a very solid, you know, Greg Olsen-like career, eight, 9 years where he's just plugging along. He has one great year, and then suddenly you draft him off that one great year. There's a million other tight ends that I like going 6-7 rounds later than him that are essentially the same as Greg Olsen. You can get a 670-yard guy.
You're paying for last year, as you've mentioned several times here.
Take a running back there.
He got 1,000 yards last year, first time in his career. But what you're really going to get, look at his bigger career. You're going to probably get 16 starts. He's going to stay healthy. You're going to get about 70 catches, about 800 yards, 5 or 6 touchdowns. That is not high-end production, but it's a good guy deeper in the draft.
Right, deeper in the draft.
Funchess takes
he's getting drafted ahead of Julius Thomas.
Funchess seems like he could wind up doing some of the same things.
It's mostly just because I think tight end is deep this year, but not very good. Like, there's 2 or 3 good tight ends, and then there's 15 to 20 others that are all close enough. You might as well just wait.
This speaks to what Wes said earlier in one of my notes I've taken, draft for ceiling. You're not going to get a big ceiling from Greg Olsen. Throw one out there for us, Wes.
This is the most head-scratching of any ADP I've seen of any position.
Wow.
Austin Seferian Jenkins is being drafted as a tight end one. Mm-hmm. The 12th tight end overall. I have no idea why that's happening. Their offensive line is miserable. He's probably going to be asked to block a lot. He's got a rookie quarterback who looked extremely raw. And what has he done? Austin Seferian Jenkins. How is he being drafted ahead of Vernon Davis? Jordan Reed is being drafted like nine tight end spots below Austin Seferian
Kyle
Jenkins.
Kyle Rudolph, Dwayne Allen. Like, it is a bizarre thing.
Antonio Gates is being drafted. I mean,
ahead
I don't care.
Ahead of Kyle Rudolph? I think Rudolph's going to be great this season.
Austin Seferian Jenkins, I have no idea what people are doing there.
Well, maybe I'll just throw this out. Maybe it's the garbage points yardage that they expect them to get piled up.
If you are drafting for garbage yardage, you need to take a primer on fantasy football.
Is it what Greg said that goes looking at this list of tight ends? I mean, he's too high where he is, but you get to 15, 16, and you're getting into some territory with dudes that just aren't going to –
you're getting
not gonna
some interesting guys like Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis.
I like
Heath
Jordan
Miller.
Reed if he plays.
Right, but that's the thing. Draft for ceiling, draft for upside. You can pick up Austin Seferian Jenkins on your waiver wire.
Right, there
I guarantee
tight,
it.
There should be tight ends on the waiver wire. Guys like Owen Daniels should be on the waiver wire. We mentioned him the other day as a guy who is getting insanely drafted too high. I'm going to throw out a name. Zach Ertz, I think, is overvalued. Wes thinks he's undervalued. But I don't know. He's just a little part of that offense. He's not on the field.
Are you sure?
All the time. He's not necessarily getting the most snaps at tight end. To me, he's one guy out of six there, and he hasn't really shown anything that it's going to suddenly like explode.
Didn't he break the franchise record for receptions in a game last year at the end of the year, which showed me that they want him more involved in the offense when he's catching 15 passes in one game?
They don't necessarily see him as a starter. They have Aguilar. They have Jordan Matthews. They got a million people.
How about now? Let's take a look now at some undervalued tight ends in the draft, and I'll start the ball rolling here. Listen. I ain't no icon. I ain't no outsider. I'm just a guy. Just a regular guy. Jeff Cumberland. Way undervalued. Cumby. Hashtag Cumby. Jets tight end. Jason Morrow. Jets former second round pick. Hurt. Cumby's going to be in that offense. Ryan Fitzpatrick going to be some serious
you
chemistry.
Like him better than Amaro as a prospect this season?
Absolutely.
I think the guy Fluellen that Mark mentioned would be a better pickup than Jeff Cumberland.
Hashtag Cumby for president. Make America great. You guys throw out some others.
I do like that there's at least four listeners out there that's like writing that at Cumberland. Right.
Fourth, oh, yeah.
14th round. A lot of good undervalued tight ends, and I think Julius Thomas is going to sink in drafts. We didn't mention that he broke a bone in his hand over the weekend. He's not going to be ready until week one. That's good.
He was already undervalued.
That's what I'm saying. And now he's going to sink. I like Julius Thomas. He's got a way higher upside than some of the tight ends like Greg Olsen that we mentioned.
People attribute all of his success to Peyton Manning, which is flat out untrue. He's a great athlete and one of the best tight ends in the league. You got to draft him high.
A lot of good undervalued candidates. Jordan Cameron's.
I love that one.
So
take
do
a,
I.
Take a chance. He's not getting drafted till late, and he could have a monster.
That makes no sense to me because Clay was targeted an absolute ton by Tannehill the last 2 years, and he's a better player than Clay, and he can do a
way
lot
better.
And at the time of the signing, as I called, leave Cleveland. Of course, he's going to have a big year. You got to factor in that kind of stuff, too.
He's a risk. A lot of these guys we're mentioning are risks, but we draft for upside. Best case scenario. Jordan Cameron has top three tight end potential.
Just take a Jordan. Jordan Reed, I agree.
Jordan Reed, definitely.
That's a great late pick.
Just so everybody knows,
he's
Jordan Reed
picked
missed
in like
12 games
in
2 years.
Round.
Look where he's going, though. 23rd.
I'm
well,
just saying,
from that
do
angle,
not,
yes.
Don't reach for him because
no, don't reach
12
for him.
Games in 2 years. Already had his knee scoped in the offseason and already has a hamstring injury. Yes, he's going to have a bigger role because everyone's hurt in Washington now, but be careful with Jordan Reed. Come on.
Don't be careful. Draft Jordan Reed because look at these bums. You can draft Austin Seferian Jenkins to get 4 points a week. Jordan Reed, on the weeks he's healthy, is going to give you 10 or 12.
Everyone wants to turn out the lights on some of the big names that have been at the tight end position for a while. I think Vernon Davis, he's basically you're going to take him in the last round of your draft. I know he's coming off a total dead year. He's a guy that I would bet on because he's an unbelievable athlete who's shown he can do it before. Take a chance on him over some. I mean, I would almost equally put him and Greg Olsen. To me, it's not that big a difference.
And last year, that's about where they were getting drafted in the same spot.
It's not a bad thing to do. Look at last year where people are getting taken, and if it's an insane difference and a guy still should be in his prime even though he struggled last year, take him.
Great Antonio Gates last year. A lot of people slept on him.
Right.
Ended up having a ton of touchdowns. Let's head back over now to the fantasy corner with our NFL media fantasy outsider, Mark Sessler. Your take on the tight end.
Well, this is not a tight end take.
Okay.
This is more of a concern that I have about people that play fantasy. So I just want to get into
okay,
it.
Okay.
I mean, basically, I'm here to speak to those people who have taken fantasy football to a dark and lonely place.
Oh.
Okay? It's fine being a fantasy head. I love you guys. But I speak pointedly to the type of fellow who prances about telling us about the 15 leagues he's embroiled in. That guy.
No, yeah, that's bad.
Now, if this applies to any of you out there, here's the truth. Anyone in more than five fantasy leagues is issuing a secret cry for help. I am not here to shame you.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm here to urge this type of fantasy head to seek help today.
What kind of help?
Well, professional help, because you've got issues. You know, that person will say, I have a need for affection, a need for tenderness, for understanding, but where do I find it in this indifferent world? This type of hobby horse fantasy head is lonely and seeking connection. It's easy to see. It's no surprise, because, you know, today's humans were parceled out and separated. There's no real interaction. It's fading.
It's the plot of Her.
That is accurate, Dan, yes.
Yes, sorry.
And instead of sharing, you know, their fears and innermost thoughts, these fantasy heads sign up for 14 leagues, hoping that some rotisserie-based parlor game will fill that empty space. I don't count anymore, says the fantasy head. You do exist. You do matter. I believe in you. Find balance, reduce your leagues, and find help.
I mean, I wish.
It's time.
I mean, I
no
I
more than five leagues.
I haven't talked about this a lot publicly, but I wish someone like Mark was there for me during a dark period of my life. It would have been great to hear those words. So I'm sure going to help some people, and that's what we're about.
You are not alone.
That's the message.
You will not have to walk this road alone.
All right. So that is, you know, we walk away from the corner, bewildered, but smarter. Mark, I hope we'll be back with you as the week progresses. I think we will. We're going to head on that street corner and talk some more to the outsider. Icons, thank you very much for everything you've given us. We'll be back on Wednesday breaking down some more positions and giving more hot takes. Scorch, I'm just a regular guy sitting in, soaking in all the knowledge. That's my role in this. We'll be back Wednesday, as we said, with another show. This is Dan Hansis signing off. Quiet Storm.
The outsider.
The mailman. The boss. And TD and everybody else behind the glass. Until Wednesday.